You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
Welcome to our July 2026 mid-month book news check-in, where we go over some of the latest Asian American and Asian American related book news and publishing announcements. As always, Books and Boba is supported in part by our listeners. So if you've been enjoying our podcast and want to become a bigger part of our book club, head on over to patreon.com/booksandboba, where as an official Patreon supporter, you gain access to our members-only Discord server, where you can chat with us and fellow book club members in real time about all sorts of topics, including our monthly book club picks. And as always, if you join us at the Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast, Boba Chats, the latest of which came out earlier this week. Our Honey Boba members also gain the opportunity to help us pick a quarterly Patron's Choice book club pick. And actually, this month's book club pick, Sunshine Nails by Mai Nguyen, was selected for us by our patrons. So as always, thanks to everyone who has become a member and supporting us at Books and Boba. And we always look forward to seeing more of you out there as well. But yeah, we are halfway through July already. I feel like this month has been going real fast.
Yeah. I think it's partly due to like the World Cup, because there's always been like something to look forward to. We're already like, tomorrow is the third place game between France and I'm like losing my mind right now.
France and England.
I was just like, France and Spain. And I was like, no, Spain is a finalist. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like the World Cup's been really fun to, keep up with.
Yeah, you're totally right, because like for the first few weeks of July, there were like 3 to 4 games a day, right?
We were living. It was great. Also, I just feel like there's been a lot of events this month. Like July is like the sweet spot for a lot of like summer events. I'm pretty excited because on Sunday I'm gonna go see The Odyssey.
I
did not get the IMAX tickets, but I did get the 70 millimeter at like an old theater. So it's going to be really cool to see the projector because it's like humongous. It's a lost art. And I'm not a big Nolan film bro, but he is like one of my more like favorite directors in Hollywood. So but at the same time, I'm like, I have not been enjoying the discourse on historical accuracy on The Odyssey. And I'm just like, as a Greek mythology girly, as someone who has been obsessed with mythology since she was like a kid watching Wishbone, there are just some things that I don't want men to mansplain to me, being like, oh, yeah, like this is how the Greeks were. And it's like, okay, but we're talking about like, you know, the Third Age. They're not wearing Roman armor. It's not historically accurate. And it's, I don't know. It just like really has concentrated like a lot of problems that I have with people and literacy, literary analysis, because there are just some people who are taking things really literally to the epic poem. And then there are people who are just like, who cares? Like, none of this is historical. It's all myth. And I'm like, well, it's not all myth. It's based in a historical setting. There is some, like, some groundwork for, you know, world building that needs to be made. So I'm excited. I've heard great things about Nolan's Odyssey, and as someone who is a fan of Greek mythology, that is going to be my big thing this weekend, plus the World Cup finals with BTS performing at the halftime show. So,
oh yeah,
I'm living
true.
This weekend.
Yeah, I mean, the right place for this to approach The Odyssey is probably somewhere in between, because at the end of the day, it is an adaptation, and you know, there's probably stuff for both the historical girlies and the Nolan girl. Does Nolan even have like, I feel like most of his like hardcore fans are dudes, right?
Yeah,
like
they're dudes. Yeah.
And part of it's just because like he doesn't have the best track record in writing female characters.
Yeah, his female characters are not great. I have not watched Dunkirk, so like I like like, I can't say for his like other like more recent films either. I didn't see Tenet as well, but I mean, at least he has the benefit of like the Odyssey having main female characters who are not just like throwaway caricatures. So I'm like, okay, you have something to work with.
Right. And so I think what will be interesting is to see what he chooses to adapt, what he chooses to like change, and what he chooses to omit, right? Because the Odyssey is, it's one of the earliest epics, right? It's like just like some might argue the epic, right?
It is the epic.
And like, you know, we've all like, it's one of those stories that has inspired so many others. Like if you've ever enjoyed a story about a group of people going on epic quest to like go home or across the lands, like it's probably been inspired by the Odyssey in some form, or inspired by something inspired by the Odyssey.
Well, yeah. And also like the Greek retellings and reimaginings have like resurged in popularity, especially with Madeline Miller's Circe and A Song of Achilles. Those are like the two books that are like still in a lot of book talks, like top books of all time, along with Six of Crows. And I'm like, yep. Like very much like hyped to the level that they should be and are executed really well.
Yeah.
Provides a different perspective. It's like, it's like the story is so familiar that you need to like do a lot of work to be faithful to the original, but also bring like some like character freshness into like the piece. So Madeline Miller's works are really good for people who want to like get into Greek retellings.
Yeah, I am interested in watching this film. I probably won't be able to until it comes onto streaming because I just can't like,
dude, watching I can't this justify, in streaming yeah. is like, yeah.
I can't justify yeah. 3 hours at the movie theater with like toddler twins at home. So like it is what it is. But, you know, however you feel about like Nolan's storytelling, his movies are always like they're event movies, right? They are a spectacle. He makes movies that like demand to be watched on the biggest screen, right?
Yeah, he is a cinephile and like he really takes like filmmaking as a serious craft. And he does like I do enjoy the fact that like people are like actually buying tickets to see this in theaters because they should. It was originally filmed for IMAX, and you know, I was really annoyed because I couldn't get tickets for any of the IMAX showings on opening weekend, even like the 1:50 a.m. showing, and I'm like 1:50 a.m. like that's nothing to me because I am a night owl. So if it's like a 3-hour movie, then I mean I'll be really tired by the end, but I think I'll be okay. Nope, yeah. Completely sold out. So, I don't know if I'll be able to, if I will watch it again, depending on like my reaction to my initial reaction to the movie this weekend. But if it's good, if it's like good enough that I'm like, I must see this epic, literal epic again, like another 3-4 hours of my life in the form that it was supposed to be watched in, then I'm like, okay,
yeah,
I guess. But
you should find a 4DX screening. Where, because like I'm the Odyssey, obviously there's a lot of water because they're on a ship, so like I imagine like there's gonna be a lot of like, I don't know if you've ever watched a 4DX film, but like
I have seen a 4DX film.
It's real stupid but also kind of cool sometimes.
I mean, the thing with it being shot on IMAX, the aspect ratio is different, right? So you get more headroom and, you know, like it's really good for immersion. It's really good for like sky shots and ocean shots, which is pretty much the Odyssey. So I can see why Christopher Nolan decided to like go that route. But also like disappointing movie ticketing news. I mean, we'll go on to news shortly after.
We're
going to
eventually get the books. Don't worry.
But so Avatar The Last Airbender, the animated movie that Paramount Plus decided to just keep on their streaming platform, and we're like, no, we're not going to release it in theaters. Well, they decided to release it in theaters, like I thought, because they want the awards, right? They have to have like a 2-week run or whatever in order to be nominated for Oscars and shit. So they did a quote unquote limited release, but it's only in New York and it's only in Burbank and it's only for like those 2 weeks. I don't think it's even a week. I think it's like a week and a half, but so I was trying to buy tickets. I was in like the notification squad, right? It's like, this is when the tickets go out. Fucking like buy the seats. There's only one theater in Burbank, one AMC Burbank theater that is showing Avatar: The Last Airbender, the animated movie. And it is such a small theater, and all of the seats were just, it was all snatched up. So I'm like, I cannot believe that I've lost a ticketing war to go see this movie. and it's just like, I want them to add more dates. I want them to add more cities, because obviously having it just in Burbank and New York City is just, you know, I think it's a slap in the face. But I mean,
the reason they pulled theatrical on this film is because it got leaked, right? And they didn't think people would actually come.
Oh,
to
it's
watch
not
it
because it got leaked. It got leaked because the theatrical release was pulled out. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like they were promised a theatrical release, and then Paramount like was just like, actually, no, we're gonna just keep it on streaming, and that like disappointed, obviously, you know, all the people who worked on this movie and also all the people who waited to watch this movie in theaters. And, you know, like someone said, fuck it. If it's only going to be on Paramount Plus of all freaking streaming platforms, then it like people deserve to see this movie. I mean, noble intentions, but at the same time, I kind of feel bad for the animators because it's like your work got leaked and that's never a good feeling, even if it is for like with good intentions. But I mean, at least there is a theatrical release. At least the animators can technically watch their work in the big screen. But it was a mess. And I don't know. It's very clear that Paramount does not care about this IP. And they're just like, whatever. Like, it just seemed like they really didn't value what they had. And it sucks because the people who watched the leaks are saying this is a really good movie. And it's like really beautifully animated. And it's like the voice acting is really good. And I'm like, why is it that good art sometimes just gets so sucked into bad business? And then, you know, like stuff like this happens. So it's just like, okay, well, you make something good and it's so hard for people to see it or enjoy it.
I mean, it's the same dance over and over again, especially in the States, which is like, I don't think American media or the people who run American media value animation the way that like other countries do, right? As a storytelling form, as a media form, right? Like, you know, we saw this with K-pop Demon Hunters last year, right? Sony didn't know what they had and they just like kind of sold it off because they thought they didn't have anything and turned out to be the biggest thing. I think just in general, like we don't have that animation infrastructure in the States where it's like, which is odd because I feel like more people than ever are watching animation for all ages, like young people, for kids and for adults.
Well, if you guys have managed to get tickets for The Odyssey and Avatar: The Last Airbender, like kudos to you, because I know how hard it was for you guys to have gotten those tickets. So congratulations. Anyway, we are going to move on to publishing news, and it's a pretty slim month, so this episode will probably be a little bit shorter, depending on how, you know, how many tangents we get into.
Well, we just spent like 15 minutes talking about,
I mean,
The Odyssey,
that's just
Avatar.
That's just us talking, though, Marvin. You could probably cut that out. This is just like our catch up, because Marvin and I do not see each other. Like, I haven't seen you in person in like over
since your wedding reception.
Yeah, it's been like a year.
Yeah.
So this is like a way for us to catch up. And we just happen to have the mic on to see if we get anything good. So I have no idea how much makes it to the editing.
Well, if you enjoyed this conversation, we do this once a month also on our Boba Chat. So if you are a Honey Boba member, you can tune in. Like I mentioned, our last episode was mainly us just complaining about being old. Or
it was just us being real millennials. And, you know, if you're someone who is, you know, not a millennial, I'm sorry. We sound really curmudgeon and grumpy.
But we do not apologize. It's our turn this is our birthright to be commercialing at this age.
Get off my lawn. It's our time.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, let's get started with our first book deal.
Okay, so our first book deal is Macmillan, Balzer & Bray, Bought at Auction, World Rights to Swap Life by Stonewall Award winner Abdi Nazemian and Brazilian YA author Pedras Rujas. The contemporary YA novel is about two teen boys, one from LA and one from Rio de Janeiro, who switch lives through a new app. They swap countries, homes, and perspectives, only to find themselves falling for each other in the process. Publication is set for spring 2027. So Abdi Nazemian is the author of Like a Love Story and also wrote The Authentics. So his name has been in our podcast for a while now, since like 2016, 2017. He's an old name, but he's also a screenwriter. So I can see why, like, he would bring like the LA perspective into this book. And I just want to say, switching lives through a new app, it sounds like what, The Holiday? Have you seen that movie with Cate Blanchett and Cameron Diaz with Jack Black and Jude Law?
It sounds familiar.
Wait, was it The Holiday? Wait.
No, The Holiday was Cameron Diaz and Kate Winslet with Jack Black and Jude Law.
So it's with Kate Winslet, Cameron Diaz, Jude Law, and Jack Black. So The Holiday. And it's about these two women, one who lives in like LA and the other who lives like in the UK, in England. They decide to swap houses, swap lives for like a short brief period of time. So it's kind of like an Airbnb situation, but you get to like, you have to like offer up your house too. It's a house swap. So that's kind of what it's reminding me of, only if it's with like young people. That sounds chaotic. I say young people as in like maybe like if you're 15, 16 year old, can you believe that? Like it has to dive into like class differences, I'm sure. Because even amongst like people who live in the same city as you, it's like, oh, that's like rich people, like etiquette that like never gets passed down to the normal common people. So I wonder if there's going to just be some commentary on like class and privilege. I don't know who the characters are, so there's that. But if you're swapping countries, there's definitely going to be some level of class and racial differences that you have to embrace.
I mean, I do wonder if it's like, are they actually switching bodies through the app, like through electronic signals, or are they like, it's like an exchange program type of thing, right? Like how sci-fi are we going with this premise?
It doesn't sound sci-fi in in my opinion, just from
just from
the book. So I don't know.
Yeah, but I guess we'll find out as this book makes it through the publishing process. But yeah, congrats to both Abdi Nazemian and Pedro Ruiz on the book deal. Okay, next up, Delacourt Press has acquired Kei Tsujimoto's debut novel, My Heart or Yours, a YA mystery thriller about a heart transplant survivor who must discover the truth behind her donor's death unless she wants to be next. Publication is scheduled for spring 2028.
Okay, so I discovered this very disturbing statistic yesterday because I was doom scrolling. And apparently, out of like organ donors, like 80% are women donors. And the recipients of organ donations are 80% men. So it's like very skewed. And I was like, what in the dystopia is this? Oh my gosh. I mean, organ donation and organ trafficking has always been like a very dark subject to write about in fiction.
It looks like the author, Kei Tsujimoto, is herself an emergency physician. So I'm sure she can bring some of her medical background into the story as well.
Yeah, if it's a mystery thriller, I'm guessing that the person who, the donor of this heart, probably did not die of natural causes or through accidental death. I'm guessing that a murder happened. Or maybe that's just like my crazy murder brain, true crime brain, just working overtime. But
why is the heart important? I think that's what I'm wondering about. Like, is there something about this specific heart that like the killer wants? Maybe the killer is someone who's on the donor list, but then the main character jumped the line.
No. Oh my gosh. I mean, this is a tangent, but I promise that it's like related. So there is this really. If you guys are fans of K-pop, like in the olden days, you guys might know about a song called Timeless, which was sung by Chang Lien and Xia Jinsu. And their music video, it was like during a time when K-pop music videos weren't just like dance music videos. They were like mini dramas, right? And this music video is about like some kind of criminal taking a woman hostage and then... And then like one of the cops like in that operation gets like killed. And then the criminal like manages to like escape. So but he has like a heart condition. So what happens is that the criminal gets the dead officer's heart for like a heart transplantation. And then they like and then he like reunites with the girl, the hostage that he took a long time ago. And then it's like it's like a weird love story. But I was like, wow, like I feel like I've seen variations of that in like Asian like melodramas and media, because it's just like, yeah, if you take someone else's heart, take someone else's like eyes, because there was also a phase where Asian music videos were obsessed with like eye donations too. So it's just like, oh, like, do you get the memories of the previous, like, of the donor's, like, memories and stuff? And I'm like, oh, well, it could be in the vein of that. But I'm yapping. All right. Next up, we have, in an exclusive submission, Delacorte Press bought Destined or Damned by Sarah Jafari. And it is a YA contemporary fantasy romance in which an 18-year-old British-Iranian angel enters her final semester of training camp and finds herself navigating a love triangle and investigating mysterious disappearances, all while trying to graduate. Publication is slated for spring 2028.
Yeah, so I Googled Sarah Jafari's Heaven Sent and Hellbent, which was the book that was mentioned in this announcement. And it looks like that was a book about... that also involved angels, like, so it's like a fantasy romance type of YA fantasy about like, you know, jinns and angels. So it feels like there's some sort of connection between those stories. I'm not sure if this part of a series or not, but I'm still like, do you think, like, is this about an angel going to like angel school or an angel that goes to like regular school?
No, I think it's like an angel school, because it says like training camp. So I'm guessing they're learning how to use their powers. It's kind of like a Percy Jackson situation where they go to like summer camp and, you know, learn more about, you know, the heritage and mastering their powers. But who knows? I feel like there was a time in like the late 2000s when like paranormal romance with angels was like a hot thing. So I haven't seen like an angel paranormal romance in a really long time. So this sounds pretty fun.
Yeah. Oh, I found a blurb on Instagram by Paper Literacy that fleshes out the premise a little more. So it's 18-year-old Zara has always been destined to be a great angel warrior, just like her parents. But when she enters her final semester of training camp, she arrives with a secret. Her wings have stopped working. And as fellow angels mysteriously disappear in the prestigious camp, through investigation, she'll realize nothing is as she once thought, and the line between good and evil is thin. So yeah, you're right. It is angel training camp.
Okay.
Or training camp for angels. Yeah. So yeah, it's like
Percy Jackson.
What's the word? Like War Academy, Soldier Academy,
yeah, Soldier Academy
of story. Like, yeah.
Like boarding school. Yeah. Like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Academy fiction, which I know, Marvin, yeah, you're like partial to, because you really liked Poppy War, which was also technically.
I did enjoy Poppy War, but then, you know, Poppy War also takes you, like, the thing with training soldiers is eventually those soldiers have to go to war.
Yeah.
And that's when it kind of takes a turn, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely sounds interesting. So congrats to Sarah on the book deal. All right, next up, Athenium and Caitlin Dlohy Books have acquired world rights to Chicken's Noodle Soup by Naz H. Khan and illustrated by Valentina Tu. Chicken Noodle Soup is a picture book in which a chicken tries to help their best friend Finch recover from a bad cold with the popular remedy. Publication is set for spring 2028.
Okay, so Chicken Noodle Soup, I immediately went into like that book series, you know, like what was it? Like, it was like short story collections, essays?
Chicken Noodle Soup for the Soul. Yeah, it's a bunch of short story collections, which, you know, for a lot of us was Reddit before Reddit became a thing. Like, it was just a bunch of like, I never really got into it, but a lot of people did. And it's like really sad stories to make you feel better about your own life.
Yeah. So from what I remember, it was like a bunch of like feel good stories, like inspirational porn, I would say. I remember a lot of like my English. Hold on. Wait a second. What? Oh, OK. Sorry. My husband just corrected me. It's Chicken Soup for the Soul, not Chicken Noodle Soup for the Soul. I'm sorry. Right. But like I said, Chicken Soup for the Soul, it was kind of like a series of essays, short stories that was like about inspiration. And it just kind of seemed very like self-help fiction.
It was definitely like one of the prototypical self-help books.
And then now we have like leaned very far into like like self-help how-to books to like TikToks to podcasts that are all about like wellness and inspirational stories. I'm very cynical. Yeah. No offense to people who like really enjoy those books, because books are books. But this sounds cute.
I don't think this is that type of noodle soup. I think this is literally like noodle soup to help you get better. I like the play on words, because like it would be a different book if this chicken was going to serve chicken noodle soup to their sick friend.
Yeah, it's like chickens, but like the soup is noodle.
Yeah.
If we wanted to be really Asian, it would be congee. So
yeah,
congee.
Or just chicken broth. My mom used to just give me chicken broth. To help with like when I was sick as well. Chicken broth and mung bean soup.
Yeah, I feel like soup is like any type of like chicken broth or like bone broth. That's like the go-to for when you're sick.
Yeah.
All right. Our final book deal is, in a 3-book deal, Inklore acquired at auction World English rights to webcomic Nove, created by Jennifer Hsu and Kate Rhodes, who are known collectively as Kaiju. The narrative centers on the romance between a necromancer and an astronomer who must defy death itself to keep their love ablaze when the astronomer falls victim to a vengeful sorcerer's blood-drenched plot. So publication is planned for 2028 for the first book.
Yeah. So Nove, I looked it up, is a currently syndicated on Webtoon. So if you want to check out the web novel, you can go there. And it is a BL story.
Ooh. That's fun. Those have been like really popular in the West lately. I don't know if it's because like translation is like more accessible now, so like people like have a wider access to it. But
I think there's that. There's also like the entry point of Heated Rivalry, which has created like which has introduced mainstream audiences to BL storytelling. And I'm sure a lot of people who like watched felt things stir within them went online and searched, what are other things just like Heated Rivalry? And there's a whole world opening to them, right?
Yeah. And also, you know, if you're like, if you watch Chinese dramas, there's a lot of like boy love in like the subgenre as well. And also, you know, Yuri on Ice, for me, that was like my canon boy love ship. So, I'm glad that, you know, Webtoon has like a lot of Webtoons are now getting picked up for traditional publication.
Yeah, I feel like it's a great way. It's much like a lot of people, like some people just don't like, they don't want to read comics on an app. So they want a book in front of them, or some people just want a physical copy, because as we've talked about before, you don't really own your digital content, right? So having something physical to own of like story that you love or that you're into, it ensures that you have access to that even when like all the servers shut down, right?
Yeah, especially when you're the creator too. Like, yeah you want to have a physical copy of your work.
Yeah. And it's cool that there is this avenue for webcomic, which has been a venue for like independent artists to like make a living, that this is a way for them to like kind of, you know, solidify their stories and like have like a physical proof that like their stories exist. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Okay, so that is a wrap on our book deals. Like I said, it's a very slim month. We're going to move on to quick pieces of news. So our first piece of news is that Vincent Yu won the 2026 Barnes & Noble Discover Prize. So the Discover Prize is an annual literary prize that's presented by Barnes & Noble for debut authored books. And Vincent Yu won for his debut novel, Seek Immediate Shelter. And we've interviewed Vincent and talked about that book on episode 355 of this show. So please go check it out.
Yeah, that's awesome. I really like this book. I really like the story. I think Vincent, you know, he explores a lot of really interesting themes in this very, like, you know, in this very, it's a very Asian American book too. A lot of the characters in his book are Asian American in a small town that, like, is recovering from a ballistic missile false alarm. And I'm really glad to see him, you know, being recognized for doing such a great job.
Like, I had a great time chatting with him in that episode. So definitely go check it out. Yeah, so our next piece of news is that the trailer for the film adaptation of Kazuo Ishiguro's novel Clara and the Sun dropped. This movie is being directed by Taika Waititi, and it stars Jenna Ortega as Clara, Mia Tharia as Josie, and Amy Adams as Chrissy, who is Josie's mom. This movie is planned to release in October, so very, very soon. I don't know if you've seen the trailer yet, Marvin.
Yeah, I actually watched it. So I haven't read a Kazuo Ishiguro book since we read Never Let Me Go, like, years ago. Like, his books are on my two TBR lists. I don't know if I'm, like, ready for it. I feel like after being, like, essentially traumatized by Never Let Me Go, like, I need to be in, like, a good space to read it. But I didn't really know much about Clara and the Sun besides it was about, like, androids. And I actually forgot that Taika Waititi was attached to direct this film, which, you know, you definitely see his fingerprints in, like, the trailer. It's very colorful. It's very upbeat. But knowing Kazuo Ishiguro, I know that that's a trap.
Yeah. Right? Okay. So this is so funny because I was listening to like a bookish podcast, and they were talking about the trailer, and they're like, oh, we're like real big Kazuo Ishiguro buffs, and like Clara and the Sun is like one of our favorite books, and we watched the trailer and we're like, what the fuck? That's not the vibe. That's not the vibe of this book. They like made it like so quirky and like comedic, and it is not that. And I'm like, I mean, judging from Never Let Me Go and Remains of the Day, yeah, he is not the type to write quirky comedic sci-fi books. I think that's something that Taika Waititi definitely brought to the project. But I really do want to watch it, and I do want to read the novel before it comes out. So maybe we'll read it for book club for my pick. Wait, is it my pick after this month?
That's funny because I was thinking about picking. I think it's my pick first and then your pick, but we can decide.
Yeah, we can decide the timing.
Who gets Clara and the Sun? Like who wants to be bummed out? But I also like the choice that Taika Waititi is making, because I think, you know, like, again, I don't know the original source material, but like Clara, the character of Clara seems to be very, like, very naive, very like upbeat, which like the trailer is portraying. But we know this is like, this being the Kazuo Ishiguro book, this being there is a side we're not seeing. And I don't know if you've seen Jojo Rabbit, but like Taika Waititi does know how to turn that switch, like creating a very quirky story, but also having like really devastating moments in it as well. So I think I'm looking forward to what he does with the film.
I think this was like the first novel after he won the Nobel Prize for Literature. So, which we also covered. It's like wild because Never Let Me Go was a book that we read. I mean, it wasn't like one of the first books we read, but it was an earlier, it was a much,
it
much
was earlier
early
years, yeah.
And then I had made Marvin read that without reading the summary. I was just like, just go in cold, blind, because I've read it and it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I mean, I had also never seen the film, which
you should watch the film. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Which, like, you know, it's one of those films. It's like everyone in that cast is like now way more famous.
Yeah, it's like really weird that Andrew Garfield's like in it, and I'm like, huh? That's right. Like, this was before Spider-Man.
I'm looking forward to the film and reading the book. I think, you know, we've not committed to being bummed out for one of our upcoming book club picks. And I definitely do not trust the vibes of this trailer. I think they're hiding something from me. And I'm looking forward to being devastated.
According to Kirkus Reviews, not to spoil anything, but Kirkus Reviews compared the novel to Never Let Me Go and called it a haunting fable of a lonely, moribund world that is entirely too plausible. So I'm like, okay, we're
great.
It's going to be.
I'm excited.
Shades of depression. Shades.
Let's
of,
do this. I'm ready.
Shades of crushing a dystopia that will be ready to crush your soul with beautiful imagery and colors, I guess.
I mean, Never Let Me Go ended on, like, you know, it's depressing,
but it's hopeful.
It's like
depressing.
It's hopeful, like, you know, it's like it forces you to, like, look at your life and, like, be appreciate the moments that you have, right? And I think that's, you know, it's melancholic, but it's not like a you're not left in despair, which I did appreciate. Like, I felt bad, but I didn't feel like everything sucks, right?
Yeah. Okay. All right, so like our next piece of news is that Hache Book Group won a union election. So employees at Hache voted 388 to 130 to unionize with the Washington Baltimore News Guild. And pretty soon they're going to elect leadership and prepare to negotiate with Hache. And it's recorded as like the largest union in trade publishing history. So that's like a pretty big deal. I mean, we have seen strikes in like the publishing industry for like not just like writers, but also like editors and booksellers. And, you know, I feel like there's just been a lot of like going back and forth with progress. Like you like demand basic minimum rights and you don't even get that past like the final round of negotiations. So it's like really cool that like a really big publisher like Hache is now going to be like a real union with real union rights.
Yeah, I mean, congratulations to the Hache Workers Coalition on, you know, their victory. I think we're on record as being like, we are for the workers, right? Like the people that actually put the work in to bring books into the world that, like, you know, this is their expertise, this is their livelihoods. And like, you know, to do a good job, you need to be able to cover your personal, you know, your personal needs, like having a roof over your head, having food to put on the table, like job security. And, you know, I think, you know, the bare minimum everyone asks for is to be treated as like a person, right? As someone, as not a cog in the machine. And, you know, I wish them the best of luck as they move forward in, you know, like building their union.
Yeah, I think it's really smart to unionize with the Washington Baltimore News Guild because it means, you know, more numbers and, you know, more coverage, I guess, because, you know, publishing industry is primarily located in New York City. So if you have like an organization that is like, you know, they have like larger numbers and people looking across like state lines and stuff, I'm sure they'll have like a lot of their bases covered. Apparently, yeah, this union is possibly like it has like 600 possible eligible members, so that's like a very, very big number, so not something to scoff at. Our last piece of news, which Hache Book Group is also a part of, is that a bunch of publishers added a class action lawsuit against Google. So this has been an ongoing copyright infringement lawsuit against Google. And it was because like these publishers, so Hache Book Group, Cengage Learning, and Elsevier, and a couple of like other writers, they said Google has been developing its Gemini AI models based on their, you know, their books. And it says that the suit charges that Google's ongoing copyright infringement is causing substantial and irreparable harm to plaintiffs and the class by displacing legitimate sales of books and journal articles by downloading copies from unauthorized sources, and facilitating the creations of illegally created substitute works that can be sold for much less than the original works. So I know, like, one of the things that was like a main complaint against Google for like their AI scraping of books has just been like, hey, we did not give you consent to, you know, use our work to make, to build your AI tool. Just because something is available in your database does not mean that, you know, it's yours to train and do with what you will. Yeah, I mean, hopefully we get something out of this lawsuit. The thing is, like, with digital copyright and AI protection laws, that's like, it's the Wild West. Like, there's like no groundwork.
Yeah. A lot of the work being put in right now is kind of creating rules and regulations that AI supposedly will follow, right? Because you're right. Right now, there's no like codified, you know, rules of engagement. Like, AI companies essentially have the leeway to act now and ask for forgiveness later, right? There's nothing telling them that you can't do this. Only people saying, hey, you shouldn't do that, or this isn't right. But I think this is one of the more clear-cut ways to go about, like, setting these ground rules, which is like, hey, you can't just take stuff that we belongs to someone else and use it for your purposes for free. There are rules already that prohibit this sort of thing.
Yeah, it's like authors are saying, yeah, my books, I'm only using your services as like a distributor. Like, I didn't give you consent to scan my book, use it to train your AI, and possibly create books that are going to be my quote unquote competition using my writing style, my experiences to make money for your company. It's just like a lot of conflicting like self-interests that Google AI and just AI in general like really makes you question. And the thing is, there's no guardrails. Like Marvin said, there's no guardrails, so pretty much like anything goes at this point, and that's a problem.
Yeah, so I think we'll definitely be paying attention to this lawsuit. And, you know, not that I'm cheering for the corporations, but, you know, like, having corporations being part of this lawsuit does give it more teeth. And hopefully that'll end up being good for the individual authors as well.
Yeah, so that is a wrap up on our book deals and book news for this month.
Yeah, as always, thanks to Reba for compiling all the news stories and publishing announcements. And, you know, if we missed anything that's been on your radar, definitely let us know either on Goodreads or on Discord. But yeah, I guess before we call an episode, Reba, can you remind us what book we are reading this month for book club?
Yeah, so we are reading Sunshine Nails by Mai Nguyen. And it is about a Vietnamese-Canadian family in Toronto who will do whatever it takes to protect their nail salon after a new high-end salon opens up in their neighborhood. And this was a patron's book club pick. So if you guys are interested in sending in recommendations for us for future book club picks, like, feel free to check out our Patreon and join our Honey Boba membership.
Yeah, and we've been having a great time reading along with our members. It is at its core an Asian Canadian, I guess, family drama. You know, we have different points of view from each member of the family, very reminiscent of The Wangs vs. World that we read last year, where, you know, everyone has their own issues, but they also all try to come together as a family. And so definitely been having a great time reading a book. The characters are messy, they're funny, and, you know, looking forward to how they address this issue of this gentrifying force that's coming into their neighborhood. But yeah, with that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you once again for joining us, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu, and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Asians in Baseball alongside Naomi Koh and Scott Okamoto. Asians in Baseball is exactly what it sounds like, a podcast about the Asian and Asian Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander Americans in Major League Baseball. Every week, we break down the highlights of what's going on with Asians in baseball and then take a deeper dive into the Asian and Asian Americans past and present who have shaped baseball as it is today. Whether you're Kim Eng's number one fan or you've never even heard of Hideo Nomo, we've got something for everyone. Especially for the Shohei Ohtani stands. Maybe too much for the Shohei Ohtani stands. Listen to Asians in Baseball wherever you get podcasts, part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.
Hey, I'm Phil Yu, and you may know me from a blog called Angry Asian Man.
And I'm Jeff Yang, author, journalist, and celebrity dad.
We host a podcast called They Call Us Bruce, an unfiltered conversation about what's happening in Asian America.
Each week or so, we host a discussion about some of the most vital and interesting topics in our pop culture and our community, bringing in guests who are shaping and informing this thing called Asian America from Hollywood to D.C. and beyond.
We got media, entertainment, food, family, politics, representation.
The good, the bad, the WTF of it all.
So check us out wherever you get your podcasts or at theycallusbruce.com.
Peace.
Peace.